Welcome, Eagles, to another episode of Tradcat Night Radio. I am Eric Ajewski, founder and owner of Tradcat Night, the most viewed and followed traditional Catholic website in the world, ranked number one by Alexa as it relates to traditional Catholicism, top 20,000 website. Want to thank all those alternative news outlets who continue to pick up Tradcat Night, including Veterans Today. I hope you all continue to spread word of Tradcat Night as we continue to get out our perspective, the traditional Catholic perspective, and present it to the mainstream. So I am highly encouraged by all that you are doing on your end. Again, click the subscription button on Tradcat Night. Right next to it, there's a bell. Make sure you click that so you can get all of the videos sent directly to your email. And we're really going to cut to the chase here because we got a shorter segment today, and I really want to get through a lot with a returning guest, Mr. William Engdahl, and I know most of you already know who he is, but just in brief, he's a strategic risk consultant and lecturer. He holds a degree in politics from Princeton University, best-selling author on oil and geopolitics, exclusively for the online magazine New Eastern Outlook. And again, his talks can be readily seen all throughout YouTube. I know the most of you know who he is. And so we're just going to get right into it today. Mr. Engdahl, I appreciate you taking time out today. What is the first subject that you would like to get into? Should we get into geopolitics on a more macro level? Should we talk about Trump and what has transpired since the last time I did talk to you? I know some people... Go ahead.
Yeah, I would suggest that we do both in the same... same move, and that is what is the Trump project? What is the Trump presidency? Because we haven't really talked since that took shape, I don't believe. And if I may, I'd like to say a few words on what I think is going on here, because it has many, many, many good people in the world and in the internet alternative media, or whatever you want to call it, thinking media, let's call it, confused. Simply don't quite understand what this is about. And many good people think that it's about Donald Trump as the Don Quixote with a wooden spear going after the deep state establishment, the evil Knievels that have had hijacked America since at least the 1970s, even further back, maybe. And somehow Donald Trump was this saint on a white horse or Lone Ranger or whatever that was going to slay all these dragons. Excuse all the mixed metaphors, but that's kind of how Trump is. And what I maintain since well before the elections, as you know, because I think we talked about this, is that Trump is a project. He's not a physical being, thinking being like John Kennedy or even Richard Nixon or others who have been president of the United States, Dwight Eisenhower. These are not presidents whose agenda I entirely agree with by any means, but these were at least people whom you would say, okay, I can understand why he's president of the United States of America, the world's greatest power, because he was commander-in-chief of U.S. forces in Europe during World War II, and he was president of Columbia University, or he was senator of the United States and had many, many forays into world politics, whatever. With Donald Trump, you've got a mafiosi real estate mogul whose background is gambling casinos with some of the dirtiest money laundering figures on the planet, like Sheldon Adelson and others. And his qualifications to become president are only that for the patriarchy, I call them, the David Rockefellers, the George Soroses, even though Soros pretends to be the opposition to Trump, it's all a game. In my view, the Trump presidency is perfect because, as Henry Kissinger said, he's a tabula rasa, he's a blank slate. No one knows what he's going to do. So We can make of him anything we want to. He doesn't carry baggage of a Democratic Party. He doesn't carry baggage of a John McCain Republican Party. He's what we want to make him. And I think we have to go a level deeper and say, okay, who is the domina in the domina sub called the United States of America? Dominating subordinate is what I'm referring to. And the domina are these patriarchs, these American oligarchs who have the cockeyed idea that they own us and they own the nation and they own all the resources and they darn near own the entire world. And I would call them psychopathic.
Yeah.
Because they don't. But we believe they do. We are awed by their appearance of power and we give them power. So they didn't throw in the towel and say, oh, we can't beat this guy Trump. You know, we try to do sex scandals on him. We try to do this on him. We try to do that on him. And he just comes out sweeter than a rose every time. So we give up. We give up the power of 170 years of our attempts to control the world through the United States. And we patriarchs simply say, to say Donald Trump, you have defeated us. What kind of naivete is that? You know, this ain't how America works. I wish it were. I wish Donald Trump were the embodiment of good and beautiful and loving human being. He's a psychopathic, sexually neurotic freak who's in there playing a theater game called Be the President of the United States.
Yeah, I've had I didn't mean to cut you off, William, but yeah, we had on Dave Dionisi, who broke him down too. I mean, some of his closest handlers are 33rd degree Freemasons. And, you know, I've always not been on the Trump train, but I do, you know, alternative media is trying to paint him as rosy. So I think that's what's kind of interesting with him. And I'm glad to see that, you know, you and I kind of see things eye to eye. But, you know, breaking down Trump a little bit more, I mean, if we were to break it down just a little bit further, what are some positives on the surface level? And what are some of the most outstanding negatives that you see thus far? And then maybe we can jump into the whole dynamic geopolitically with Iran, with Russia, okay, with China.
Yeah. On the positive, I think it's all to the good. He canceled the Trans-Pacific Partnership and de facto killed the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership and brings up NAFTA for renegotiation. Let's see how far that gets with Goldman Sachs as Treasury Secretary. I'm frankly not optimistic. I think they're just kind of rejiggering the various deals. But the agenda, I think, is still the same agenda of Trump's handlers. And they're not just 33rd degree Masons. They are, you know, they're the patriarchs. They're these characters, these stupid characters like David Rockefeller, 102 years old or something. George Soros, who's 86, but looks like he's 106 nowadays. And really, look at these pictures of these people.
Yeah.
And I think there's a good reason, because look at what they've done with the energy of their lives. They've killed, they've maimed, they've perverted, they've distorted. And they could have done something very positive for the world with all their money and influence, but they decided to do destruction. So in terms of the Trump agenda, I think the best way to understand it is the fact that Henry Kissinger, at 93 years old, this guy is sharp as a snake or a lizard, and he is the unofficial foreign policy advisor of Donald Trump. Not by accident. He is the one, by all appearances, who got James Mattis to be Secretary of Defense and Rex Tillerson of ExxonMobil, the Rockefeller company, to be the Secretary of State. And Kissinger, if you understand geopolitics, and unfortunately, most people who throw around the word geopolitics are politically illiterate, if I can be so blunt. They haven't read the major works of the field by Sir Alfred Mackinder his essay from 1904 to the Royal Geographic Society in London, where he outlines the concept of Russia as the heartland and Britain as the world island and how to control the heartland. And he did that again in a book he wrote during the Versailles Conference in 1919 after World War I. And in there, Mackinder states the whole game that Henry Kissinger is a master of, Brzezinski also. Some of the neocons are so politically illiterate they don't understand history, and that's one of the big problems of the Obama and the George W. Bush presidency, that these nincompoops had no depth in, well, maybe it's fortunate for the world because they failed miserably in every one of their games. They just saw raw power as the way to success and not understanding leverage and geopolitics. But going back to Mackinder's thesis was and is still the operating thesis of Kissinger today. If you, a power, let's say British Empire or the United States, control Central Europe, which Mackinder defined as Germany, France, Poland, Czechoslovakia back then, Central Europe, if you control Central Europe, who controls Central Europe controls the heartland, at that point, Tsarist Russia. And just after that, during the Bolshevik Revolution, 1919. And if you control the heartland, look at the map. Russia goes from Ukraine all the way to Vladivostok on the Pacific. It's the largest landmass nation on the face of the earth, even after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And if you control the heartland, you control the world island. Now, these terms are Mackinder's terms, not mine. But the world island is the landmass called Eurasia, including China, India, the Middle East, Northern Africa. And look at the geopolitics of the world since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. The United States and NATO policy has been to prevent a reemergence of Russia in any way, shape, or form, to literally rape it financially and industrially, destroy its economy, and bring Russia to her knees. So the Obama agenda was a catastrophe because I maintain that the people like Ash Carter, this excuse for a defense secretary, or Victoria Nuland, this creature whose vocabulary is that of a New York longshoreman and not that of a diplomat of the U.S. State Department. These people have the mentality of thugs or victims of thugs, and no in-depth sense of history, no in-depth sense of culture, and so forth. So they just think might makes right. That's the neocon agenda, and it's the agenda of the military-industrial complex who financed the creation of the neocons and their think tanks. It's very simple who these neocons are. Some people say, oh, it's Israel, blah, 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 blah. Of course, Israel's involved. Their military-industrial complex is joined at the hip with that of the Pentagon and has been for several decades. But it's the military-industrial complex that is creating this and creating these war scares, all this building up of NATO and so forth. Who do you think gets the contracts? The world's largest defense export in 2016 was the United States of America. So you fuel all these conflicts, these tensions in the Middle East, in Syria, in Ukraine, and so forth. And Boeing, Donald Douglas, Lockheed, all of them, Raytheon, they just are sitting in tall cotton, you know, reaping in the profits and running to the bank. So this is what the Trump presidency is about, is to rebuild and reposition the U.S. military-industrial geopolitical combine together with big oil, because it was losing everywhere. It lost Ukraine. It lost Russia to an alliance in Eurasia with China. and the BRICS countries and the Shanghai Cooperation countries, Syria couldn't even knock over a pipsqueak state like Syria the way they did with the Iraq, you know, some 10, 15 years before. So they just, you know, something drastic had to be done, and the drastic from the standpoint of the oligarchy, the American patriarchs, is called the Trump Project. And it's as simple as that. Donald Trump is a cipher. He's a null. As long as he can pretend and make his tweets on his social media, he feels powerful, but he doesn't have any power whatsoever.
Now, show him. You know, Mr. Engdahl is one of the world's leading geopolitical analysts in the world. On a scale of 1 to 5, I mean, how fearful should Americans be over a potential, like, kind of Cold War II situation? We've had this reports of Russian subs, you know, being off our East Coast. I mean, given today's news, I mean, who knows if that was even true. But, I mean, where are we at now? I mean, there's growing concerns. We're seeing U.S. Military drills, combined drills with Poland. We're now having Trump and Russia kind of firing words back over Crimea. I mean, is this just all for show? Is that what you think this is? We're just trying, it's just propaganda?
No. The agenda is very simple. You had, as a result of the failed Obama geopolitics of the last 8 years, what was shaping up was what I call a golden triangle of nations in Eurasia. Russia, China, and Iran, very, very different nations, very, very different cultures, histories, and so forth, but very, very proud nations. And those three, in the course of the Obama politics, have formed economic, strategic, military, political, high-speed railway links, and other things. And as Brzezinski said in his famous book in 1997, the grand chess game about Eurasian geopolitics, the only potential challenger to American sole superpower hegemony, i.e. we run the world, ladies and gentlemen, is Eurasia. Eurasia has the population, it has the raw materials, the oil, the gas, the uranium, every rare earth metal you can conceive of. It has the skilled labor force. It has some of the best scientific cadre on the face of the earth. America doesn't educate scientists anymore, by and large, over the past 30, 40 years. We've outsourced that too, it seems. So, you know, the globalization freaks who dominate Wall Street banking and so have outsourced most everything to the rest of the world, and America's left as a hollow shell. So the job of the Trump presidency is to bust open that triangle, to put it simply. And what they're doing is demonizing the weak link of the triangle called Iran. They want to, and they've said this openly. I have a new article I posted on my website, williamengdahl.com, about 2 days ago. And what they want to do is to break the alliance between Russia and Iran. And if they do that, with the military buildup in the South China Sea against China and the rattling sabers on trade wars and so forth, currency wars potentially, they intend to try to break the cooperation of this golden triangle in Eurasia, and with that divide and rule. It's nothing new under the face of the earth, but it's the Kissinger agenda. He says so in his books and his writings and so forth.
Now, moving more back, to domestic affairs, if you will. I know you've covered this in the past month or two. There have been many who suggested with Trump's election that maybe the trend would be that the police state would start to go away. And from my perspective and my research, it doesn't seem to be the case. If anything, maybe you can say that it's getting worse. Maybe talk about the rise of the police state here domestically. I know a lot of Americans are kind of scratching their heads on this one with Trump.
I don't see, sadly, I don't see any attempt to lessen the police state controls. In fact, quite the opposite. with people like Steve Bannon in the White House sitting in on National Security Council cabinet meetings and so forth. These are people with a police state mentality. The generals, now he has a general again as head of the National Security Council. He has a general as head of the Pentagon, Mattis, as defense secretary. He has a general ahead of Homeland Security. But these are people with kind of a police state mentality. If you know anything about modern U.S. military conditioning and training, these are not deep philosophical humanist thinkers. These are trained warriors, and that lends itself very much easily to an authoritarian solution to problems. So I am not at all optimistic about this police state trend in America becoming less. And the confrontation, I think the whole game of Trump and all these tweets and these offenses against the press and so forth are designed to create confrontation everywhere, because the patriarchs behind Trump know quite well from the history of civilization going back to Babylon. If you have people fighting each other, they don't understand how they are being manipulated from those outside who are, pulling the strings. So, if people are calm, if they have time to reflect, to realize, oh my Lord, what is this economic program that Mr. Trump is proposing for America? This is not what he talked about at the campaign. And these campaign promises seem to change about every 5 minutes.
Shocker, right? That's a shocker. Now, what about economically speaking, I know you also been covering this too recently, as we do on TradCat Night, the whole war on cash. What's the latest trends you're seeing there, latest analysis, maybe the next countries to kind of jump on board with this whole move and push towards a cashless society?
The war on cash is fascism pure, if I can call it something. And I speak that word fascism with historical knowledge. It's state control of every move we make, every purchase we make, everything we do, and every place we go. And also, ultimately, it's a way for the government to confiscate our wealth, as they did in Cyprus 3 years ago when they had a banking crisis there. The European Union passed this bank bail-in law, and they just stole 100,000 euros deposit from every depositor in the bank, up to 100,000, above 100,000 euros. And that has now been codified into a European Union-wide law. It's not being talked about very much, but it's there. It's ready to be enacted whenever the European Central Bank and the gods of money, if you want to call them that, the pan gods of money, decide to confiscate the wealth of Europeans. Leading economist Larry Summers in the United States, this scallywag former Treasury Secretary who ruined the banking system with repeal of Glass-Steagall back in 1999, and then tried to ruin Harvard University as president a few years later, he's come out for the cashless society. India's Modi, the Prime Minister of India,
yes,
did this insane move to outlaw two of the most commonly used Indian rupee notes in the economy, and that accounted for something, I forget the exact number, but about 80% of the cash transactions. India is a third world country with a small, first world educated elite, but it's a third world country with 1.3 billion population. Most transactions are done hand to hand in cash because nobody trusts the banks. The banks are notoriously corrupt in India. So Modi did this on the advice of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the U.S. Agency for International Development, which is a CIA front organization. This is well documented. This is no pulled out of the hat moniker. So this is a U.S. agenda being pushed on India as a trial balloon, and if they can do it on the world's most populous nation and get away with it, now they're doing it in Sweden, I was in Sweden 2 years ago for a family affair, and I tried to buy something in a shop with cash. They said, oh, no, we don't take cash, only credit cards.
Yeah.
So, you know, this, and it's the European Central Bank is trying to outlaw 500 euro bills. And that is just the first step, the way they did in India. That's just the first step toward this cashless society. Say, well, it's more efficient. It's a digital economy anyway.
Yeah.
I go to my local bank, and the banker says, why don't you do banking online, Mr. Engdahl? I said, because I don't trust it. I like to do it physically on black and white paper, so I know what I'm doing. I have a record of the transaction, and it's not purely computer. Okay, maybe I'm old-fashioned on that, but this whole trend is to get people so hypnotized by digital money that they have no connection with it anymore. From there, it's a very simple step to confiscate whatever the government or the state wants to do. Mussolini called that corporativism, fascism.
Yeah, no question about it. Certainly something we keep track of, and who knows, you know, what angle they will use. We see this kind of trend within the microchipping community of it becoming a novelty and younger people thinking it's cool, and who knows what angle they'll use. I think they're already using it, you know, in some businesses even to track their own employees, and I think people can see that kind of technology coming down the road.
Yeah, it's horrendous. It's 1984.
Yeah, no question about it. Now, before I let you go, Mr. Engdahl, I wanted to get your take on the last subject that I had for us today. And what's your view and take on the latest with the migration crisis? You know, how realistic is this wall that Trump proposes to build and then have, you know, Mexico be taxed? I know Rothschild money runs deep, not only throughout world governments, but the Vatican. I mean, what's the end game here? I actually had on a special guest the other day who was suggesting that these migration movements aren't actually even happening. It's just fear mongering. I mean, I didn't agree with him. But I mean,
they're happening. These aren't migration movements. These are war refugee movements. Let's take the situation in Germany where I live. More than 1 million war refugees from Syria, from Tunisia, from Libya, from Afghanistan, because
Are you there? I lost you, William. Are you there? Are you there, William? Are you there, William? Let's try to reconnect.